You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
Yeah, good morning. It is the Mike Salk Show on 710 ESPN Seattle. 710sports.com as well. Good to be with you guys here on a Thursday. Another day closer to a big weekend in Seattle sports. Epic weekend with the Kraken finally at home. The opening for sports anyway of the brand new Climate Pledge Arena. Justin, you wrote, Justin Barnes here. Justin, you wrote CPA to describe it, which I got to say, like, threw me for a loop. Like, I know that's what it'll probably be described as in writing often. But CPA is, you know, an accountant.
Right. Certified personal accountant. Personal or professional?
I don't know. Who knows?
I call T-Mobile Park. I just call it T-Mo now.
T-Mo.
Or I'll see you at T-Mo-y. I do that all the time to my buddies.
It's not TMP?
No, not TMP.
Okay.
Just T-Mo.
Okay.
T-Mo. But yeah, CPA, I think, is where I'm going to stick.
Okay. Well, I'll be confused for a while every time I read this. It's like, and the accountant is what now? Yeah, right.
See you at CPA tonight.
Yes. Okay. CPA. I got it. Are you still upset about the robo-umps? Clearly the Red Sox are. It was interesting just kind of watching some of the baseball yesterday. And look, I know they got a bad call. Like, no one's going to argue it wasn't a bad call, but giving up the net, what was it? They've been outscored 16-1. Since that moment, do you think it affected them that much? Like, they're that much in their own head over the fact that a call should have been made, or do you think it's just the two things are not connected?
In their own head is not the way I would describe it. But, I mean, we've seen little things like that lead to really awful innings immediately after. And then, I mean, sure, what happened yesterday wasn't because of the bad call.
So you don't think
the
they're connected?
Before.
You don't think it's connected at all?
No, but you know as well as anybody that momentum is such – baseball is such a momentum sport. So I'm not going to say they're not connected, but I'm definitely not going to build a bridge between the two.
It's been interesting kind of listening to them. Nathan Eovaldi, I thought, handled it reasonably well.
I thought it was a strike. You know, but again, I'm in the moment. I'm trying to make my pitches. I'm attacking the zone. Came in the ninth inning. I gave up a double to Correa, and I tried to go to work there and try to get some outs and, you know, prevent him from scoring. I had two strikeouts, and then facing Castro, I felt like I was in control of the at-bat. Felt like I made a good pitch on the outside corner, and, you know, it didn't go my way, but I got to come back and, you know, I got to answer back and make another good pitch.
I mean, that doesn't sound like a guy who's gone into a shell and now I can't figure out how to play baseball, but it's amazing how much that series has just completely turned on that one call, and now the Astros just house of fire, and we'll see whether or not that changes as they go back to Houston, but kind of crazy to watch. And the other series in the National League, you know, same type of thing of these just like runs scored in bunches. And yesterday it was a 9-2 victory for Atlanta that all of a sudden is a game away from heading to the World Series and knocking down these Dodgers team that I think everybody thought had the payroll and everything else and were probably going to end up there. So, yeah, I've been really enjoying the baseball postseason, but I watch all of it with this eye towards, okay, what is this going to mean for the Mariners in the offseason, right? Like, postseason when you're not in it is in some way, it's awesome, but it's also a little bit of a preview of, okay, what is this offseason going to look like? I thought everybody would want to know that Buster Olney wrote a pretty good article yesterday. I retweeted it this morning on the five shortstops, these five big names that we're talking about and who's going to be in on them. He had them ranked. He talked to a whole bunch of evaluators, ranked the big five shortstops, and then talked about who might be in on which. So just so you know, the five shortstops that are going to be available. Corey Seager, and I'm going to read them in order of how we had them ranked. Corey Seager, Carlos Correa, Marcus Semien, Trevor Story, and Javi Baez. Those are the five big shortstops.
5-1 or 1-5?
No, 1-5. Seager's considered to be the best of them, the best of the bunch, followed by Correa, Semien, Story, and Baez. And you know, some of them may end up at different positions, but there's the speculation that between those five, $1 billion will go to them.
Oh, my goodness.
So an average of $250 million per contract.
Wow.
Now, it doesn't mean all of them get $250, but the average will likely be $250 million. So if you want one of those guys, probably want to be right, right? And there's risk with all of them, of course. If you want to go after, let's say, Trevor Story, you better be really sure that his elbow's okay and that he can hit outside of Coors Field.
Who's the youngest in that five? Is it Seager?
I don't know. That's a good question. If I had to bet, it's Baez, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
I don't know. You're going to have to look that up. But here's what I found kind of most interesting. So he has them in on four of the five. He has the Mariners in on Seager, Correa, Semien, Story, but not Baez. He thinks Baez is most likely a Met or a Cub. That
he has him in on Seager.
Yeah, which kind of throws a little bit of doubt on the whole article.
Yeah.
Because there is exactly a 0% chance that they will land Corey Seager. So let's throw him out and say that really you're talking about Carlos Correa, Marcus Semien, Trevor Story. Do you see Carlos Correa coming to Seattle? I don't have a good reason why not, but I don't. I don't see him staying in the AL West and coming to Seattle. I think this is a Semien or Story conversation, but okay. The other, and you, if you guys have a thought on if there's one of these five shortstops you've been lusting after, you know, you can text it in 206-421-3776. What I found almost most interesting, because a lot of that is, you know, there's a lot of idle speculation in there, but where I thought Buster brought some real value was, who are the other suitors going to be? Like, who are you competing against for these guys? And I think the list of names is interesting. Of course, the Yankees are going to be on this list. I see them as more of a Seager-Correa conversation. That's my gut. So sure, I don't know that if we're in agreement that the Seager and Correa are not the two most likely for the Mariners, probably not really competing with the Yankees, which is a good thing. The Dodgers, but mostly just in on Seager to see if they keep him. Okay. Houston, but probably just in on Correa to see if they can keep him. Well, again, I don't see the Mariners as being major suitors for Seager or Correa. So you're talking Semien and Story. So who are your legitimate competitors there? Well, this is where Buster lists two teams that I feel like you should have an absolute shot at competing against. You're not talking about competing against the creme de la creme of Major League Baseball. The two other teams that he lists are Detroit and Texas.
Okay.
Don't you feel like you've got a shot against Detroit and Texas? You've got very little money on the book. Same with them. They have money to spend. So do you. So it shouldn't be a matter of just spending money. You should be able to spend as much. There shouldn't be any sort of, it's not like the Yankees or Dodgers where you're like, well, I guess there's nothing you can do. Storied franchise, and they just decided to go nuts spending. I don't think Detroit or certainly Texas is a storied franchise. Detroit is, but the city is such a challenge for them to overcome. So don't you feel like you got a shot against those two teams in a bidding war? I do.
Oh, in a bidding war. Okay, I thought you were talking about just in terms of which team, if these players had a choice,
want to go to. It's a choice and a bidding war, right? I mean, it's sort of all of that together. In a free agent battle, do you feel like you've got a shot against both the Rangers and the Tigers?
Yeah.
I do.
Absolutely.
Certainly, you showed you're a better team that's farther along than either one of those two, right? Certainly, you know, Seattle, if you want to take a city, compare it to Detroit or Dallas. I feel like you're going to win that one every time.
I think about from a player perspective, I'm like, man, if I go with Detroit, say, and let's just pretend that they're, I know this isn't true, let's just pretend that they're not like, I need to win a World Series in the next 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Let's pretend that that's not important to the player. I always think about how difficult it is for a player to come to Seattle or Miami just because of the amount of travel that they have to do as a player on that team.
Yeah, that may be an issue, right? I mean, you got things you've got to overcome. But I see you as having a pretty legitimate shot. I mean, again, if you want to compete against other teams, aren't those the teams you want to be competing against? The Rangers and the Tigers?
Yeah, not the Yankees.
You're
not the
farther
Dodgers.
Ahead of them in the rebuild process, and you got a better city advantage than either of them. I think you got a pretty good shot. So I like your chances there. Texter says, I'm confused. We already have a Gold Glove shortstop.
That's what you're going to say.
Yeah, I don't think either of these guys ends up at short. What you need is somebody who's probably going to play third or maybe second base. Semien played second base last year, and obviously Trevor Story could move to third. So, I mean, I look at those two guys and think that there are options for them, but those are the best players available on the market. And if you've got an opportunity to go get one of them, I see that as a great opportunity for your Mariners. All right, coming up here, a prodigal son returns home. Again, a second time. Will it work out better finally for him this time? We'll tell you everything you need to know. And we'll do it next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Yeah, it's a good question from Twitter star Luke Arkins. Why would the Mariners only be in on four of those five shortstops? I don't know. I don't know why Buster doesn't have them in on Javi Baez. Maybe they would be. I think that they kind of were looking at him at the deadline last year. So I would probably put them in on Baez. He's probably the weakest of the five options. But, I mean, if you're in on the other four, there's no reason. If he's got them in on Corey Seager, my guess is that I'm sure they would also be in on Javi Baez.
We looked up their ages, by the way. Seager is 27 and technically the youngest. He's tied for the youngest. But Semien's 31. Trevor Story's 28.
Okay.
And I think, was it Javi was 27 as well?
Story's younger.
I think Correa was 27 as well. And then Javi was 28. So they're all 27, 28 except for Semien.
Story came up earlier than I realized, man. He is young. That's pretty cool. All right. It is 6:15. Time for Need to Know.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, Seahawks fans years ago pined for Jake Locker to come to Seattle. And from what I've heard, it almost happened too, by the way. He just wasn't interested in playing once he retired. Well, now those same Husky Seahawk crossover fans will finally get to scratch that itch. Seahawks claim Jacob Eason, different Jake, off of waivers from Indianapolis. Former Lake Stevens and UW starter, had been drafted by the Colts last year in the fourth round. He's played in just one pro game, completing two of his five passes with an interception. He'll be the backup this week with Jake Luton and Danny Etling both on the practice squad, so we'll see how that goes. I appreciate the Seahawks doing everything they can to improve the roster and to bring in players that can help, but I'll admit I struggle to see how that's likely here. It's funny, Eason's college numbers are actually better than you would think. In his 1 year here, he completed more than 64% of his passes, had a touchdown-interception ratio of 23-8, and a quarterback rating of almost 144. Doesn't sound bad. And yet the team was 8-5, 4-5 in the conference, and if you watch those games, it just seemed to struggle. Lots of errant passes, hard-to-catch balls, and a lot of poor decisions on when to stay, when to escape the pocket, but here you go. That's who they bring in yesterday. Team will get back to practice after an extra off day because of Monday Night Football. All eyes on running back Rashad Penny as he is said to be fully healthy and ready to take on a key role this week. May need to also, based on the way Jake Heaps was talking about Chris Carson's neck, which was not good. When he talked about stingers and mentioned the way Cliff Avril and Cam Chancellor's career both came to an end with that injury, I think that would have everybody around here worried about the future for Chris Carson. Team did work out a pair of running backs this week, BK Emmons, BJ Emmons. Jay? Did I write K?
R.K. Simmons? Who are we talking about?
Generally, K is an odd one in there. I think it's BJ Emmons and Dexter Williams. Thursday Night Football tonight, beat up Browns team without Baker Mayfield taking on the Broncos.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, all systems go for the Kraken as they got a little rest and hopefully now some time to practice ahead of Saturday's home opener. Saw plenty of pictures from inside the arena over the last day or two. I got to tell you, it looks spectacular. I love the way they've used all the glass to give it that outdoor feel, and small touches like the living green wall add a lot of Northwest character as well. Based on what we heard from those who attended Foo Fighters show, the concession prices might be a little steep, so that's something to watch out for if you're heading to a game. Shouldn't surprise anyone, though, at least anybody who knows how much construction prices rose while the building was getting done. NBA tipped off over the last couple of nights. Double OT at Madison Square Garden last night. Knicks win. Lakers dropped their first game a couple nights ago.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, how things can turn on one pitch, or at least that's the easy storyline in the ALCS. Red Sox seemed to be heading to the ninth at home and looking to take a commanding 3-1 lead in the ALCS. And then a close pitch was called a ball, and since then the Astros have outscored them 16-1. 7 runs in that ninth inning and then 9 more yesterday. Would things have been different if that pitch was called a strike? Yeah, maybe. Or maybe the results would have been the same. Who knows? Now it's Houston that heads home up 3-2 in the series. Game 6 tomorrow night at 5 o'clock. Who invited the Braves to this party? Did anybody see that one coming? They got the Dodgers on the brink of elimination after a 9-2 victory last night. Huge game from Eddie Rosario. 4-for-5 with 2 home runs, 4 runs driven in. They'll now have a chance to clinch tonight. First pitch just after 5 o'clock. And again, that's a team that is a little ahead of you in their rebuild, but did some of the same things the Mariners have done. Can you end up having some of that same success? That certainly is the goal. And those are the things you need to know here on a Thursday morning. We'll do that every hour, quarter past the hour.
I admittedly don't follow the NL as much as I do the AL for obvious reasons, but I realized about 2 weeks with the season or before the season ended where the Braves were in their record. Did you see how they finished the season? 88-73.
Right.
Mariners would have won that division.
Isn't that annoying?
It's so frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, that is frustrating.
But you're right. Where did they come from? They just got hot at the right time.
And they're doing this without Acuna, which I think is the most impressive thing.
Yeah.
I mean, he's their young stud and everything he brings to the table, but... You know, Eddie Rosario's got an OPS over 1,000, I think, so far in the postseason. Freddie Freeman has struggled, but has come up with a couple of big moments and big home runs. And it's interesting to watch these teams just piecing together with their pitching staffs. It's not like you're watching starters going 7-8 innings, right? Yesterday, it was old friend Drew Smyly. I guess he was briefly a friend. He never actually pitched here for the Mariners. But Drew Smyly, who went like 3 1/3 and got the win in relief. Right, he gave a couple runs, but he also pitched really well. I think he set down 8 or 9 in a row at one point. So they're just kind of piecing it together, and bullpen pieces are stepping up, and they just keep throwing relievers at you. It's interesting. For all the hate that the bullpen games got for the Mariners this year, half these playoff games look like bullpen games, and they're just trying desperately. You know, they got starters relieving and relievers starting. Everything got like topsy-turvy in the postseason.
And the first few games of the Braves beat the Dodgers, close one-run game.
Yeah.
And then last night, of course, was a bit of a blowout, but man.
But I want to ask Jerry about that today. We're going to talk to Jerry DePoto as we do on Thursdays, 8:30 this morning, so about 2 hours from now. I want to ask him about that and kind of the way starting pitchers and pitching staffs in general are being utilized in the postseason, because it just looks totally, totally different. So... Random thoughts as a texter here. I had heard the new Climate Pledge Arena has NBA locker rooms already. They're being used as storage rooms for now. More great news. Yeah, that's absolutely true.
I was just looking that up. I can't find that story, but that
it
is awesome.
True. Well, I've seen the plans for it. I know exactly where they are and how it works. This is not news, though. Again, this has been true for ages, and this has been talked about. I know that not everybody listens to every moment of every show or pays attention, but the NBA to Seattle through Climate Pledge Arena is not new. I laugh every time people are like, oh, and did you hear? Lywicki said they might get basketball. Like, yeah, that's been literally true since the very beginning. The owner of the Kraken, David Bonderman, is a minority owner in the Boston Celtics. He's already in the NBA club. They built this arena for basketball as well as hockey. This is not new. We're just waiting for a team to be ready. That's it. As soon as there's a team ready, it's coming here.
If you had to put $100 down,
yes.
What is the time frame on a team?
I can't, because it's entirely dependent on when there's a team available.
So right? it's not going to be expansion.
It could be one or the other. It's when either the owners, all 30 owners, decide that they're willing to expand the league, or somebody's ready to move.
Do you think it's more likely to be move?
I did, and now I'm not so sure.
Huh, okay.
But I don't know when that's going to be. I just know that it's going to be. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And that is a guarantee. The next basketball team that moves or is expanded will be in Seattle. Right? Bank on it.
Okay.
Whatever you need to do to bet it, go do it.
That and 100 yards from Rashad Penny.
I think that one may be more likely than the Rashad Penny thing, but we'll see. All right, coming up next, Matt Hasselbeck yesterday told the best story of gamesmanship in football IQ I think I've ever heard. You're going to hear that and a whole lot more from Matt. Coming up next, Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
The Matt Hasselbeck Show, presented by Infinity of Bellevue and Linwood. Seahawks legend Matt Hasselbeck takes you inside the Seahawks and the NFL for a full hour, exclusively on the Mike Salk Show.
Hello, Matthew. How are we doing today?
What's going on? Big week.
That was my tribute to Steve Ravel. I called you Matthew. I don't feel nearly as comfortable doing that as he does.
You know what? It's so funny, because I think the reason he does that is my mom met up with him in the parking lot one day, and she was like, are you the one that's calling him Matt? Because everyone calls me Matt. I call myself Matt, but my mother calls me Matthew.
Of course.
Pretty much everyone in my family. So Steve Ravel, he stuck to it. Steven Ravel, maybe I should say.
You should, yes. You're going to get a chance, hopefully, to see Raves this week or on Monday night. It's pretty sweet, man. Ring of Honor, and you'll be here in Seattle for the big ceremony.
I cannot even tell you how excited I am, how excited my family is, not only to go out to Seattle for a Monday Night Football game against the Saints, should be awesome, but the Ring of Honor is just something that is over and above my wildest dreams, you know, early on in Seattle. Just, it was something that I certainly was aware of, and the great names that are up there, but can't even put into words right now what it means. Very cool.
So when you come to Seattle and you see that, right, and you look up and you see kind of on the rafters the players, do you spend time kind of researching that and thinking about it and trying to get to know kind of what those players meant to the organization and getting to know them?
Well, I absolutely did. I mean, when I got traded there, when Mike Holmgren traded for me, I didn't know everything that I needed to know, and I didn't know every name up there. You know, I knew some of the names for sure. I knew Dave Craig and Jim Zorn and Kurt Warner and some of those names. But I didn't know enough about Kenny Easley or Dave Brown or Jacob Green even. And, you know, it was, I think, just one of the great things that being coached by Mike Holmgren and that staff, they really cared about the history and the tradition and the foundation that had been set there. And so when we were playing big games and the alumni, the kind of that NFL legends community would kind of come back and you saw how much excitement they had for our game. And we were the ones in uniform and they were just former players. It gives me goosebumps now to think about it. And I felt it myself when Seattle wins that Super Bowl in New York, as a former player now, mm-hmm. as someone with a ton of Seahawks pride and Seattle pride. You know, I then fully grasped what it felt like for those guys, the Steve Largent crew, you know, what it meant to them. And it's a special bond that we have even with the guys that are playing right now.
When you got, I assume, to meet some of those guys and have experiences with them, do you remember some of those early moments of meeting, whether it's Largent or Zorn or Chris? I mean, obviously, I know you were with Zorn quite a bit, but do you have moments that stand out with some of those guys?
I mean, my first moment was, I can't believe how little Steve Largent is. He's just like, you know, I thought he was going to be, I don't know. How did he do what he did for such a long time at such a high level in that body? That was my first, thinking. But I mean, I remember one game we're playing an away game and Jacob Green spoke to the team. It was unbelievable. I mean, you want to talk about the great speeches you've ever heard in a locker room. Jacob Green would have to be in my top five. Playing pickup basketball with Dave Brown when he was, you know, basically my father's age was really incredible just to see the competitive nature in a great athlete. No matter what we were doing, it could be rock, paper, scissors or pickup basketball. And then all those stories that I heard from Jim Zorn and Steve Largent really made sense. Like, hey, this guy's a leader and he is a competitor, and you see what sort of made those units and those players great. So it was a thrill of a lifetime to just be around those guys when possible.
Who will be coming in for Monday night? Who's here with you?
Well, my immediate family, so my wife and my three kids, which is a challenge if anyone who's got teenagers knows what's that like, what that's like. But my parents will be there, my brother and his family, my brother Tim, who's also on television and works Sunday, Mondays for ESPN, his family won't be able to make it, but them and then just friends, a lot of friends, so, you know, almost too many to mention. But it's going to be, I'm kind of just treating it a little bit like a business trip. I'm going to stay focused and understand you know, like, I guess I have a small role in what's going on that night. So I'm excited for that and definitely very, very excited to do it in front of the 12s and that crowd there in Seattle.
Well, with that in mind, obviously we're going to rank something at the end of our time together today. We've been doing that every week. We do our ranked segment with Matt at 9:45. But I stole somebody else's ranking, and I thought I would run through some of your great moments here in Seattle. Hopefully you won't be too embarrassed, but maybe you can just offer some context or some stories or some memories from some of these games. I went to Field Goals, who's one of the fan sites here and does a great job blogging about the Seahawks, and I found the top 10 Matt Hasselbeck performances as a Seahawk. It's top 10 Hasselbeck's best performances. I don't have sound for all of them, and I don't know about the accuracy of all of these. Most of this is before I moved here, so... number 10 was Seahawks 17, Cowboys 14. This is from October of 2002. And it sounds like you, what did you do in this game?
That's the Emmitt Smith breaks the NFL record game. I actually was not the starting quarterback for that game. I mean, it was a rocky start for me in Seattle. I had the job, lost the job to Trent Dilfer. Trent tears his Achilles in that game. The crazy thing about that game, though, is that I brought one pair of cleats to the game, and we had like the biggest bunch of jokesters on our team. Well, they put shaving cream in my shoes to be funny the day before. And so I had to play that game. Trent tears his Achilles, and I got to go in. And, you know, Emmett got the record, but we're just trying to get the win. I got to go play that game. I'm sliding around in my, like, shaving cream looped up cleats, the only cleats I brought. You know, I had a little bit of a, I don't know, pessimistic attitude about playing that day. So, and I had to play there. And so I just went down the field just taking completions. And I just remember, you know, the coaches were so happy with the fact that I just, like, got completions. And I thought, well, shoot, like, if that's going to make you happy, I can do that. I can stop forcing it so much. And it was definitely a big step for me. I wouldn't say it was one of my greatest games, but it was a game I'll always remember because Emmett broke the record and we got the win, and I had to do it with the slippery cleats.
I always felt like Emmett should have broken the record against the Cardinals. It just seemed like every time he would play against them, he would just run through the biggest holes I've ever seen.
Yeah, well, he's a great player, and I dominated with him in Tecmo Bowl and Nintendo when I was a kid. I can't say much bad about him.
I was more of a Chicago Bears Tecmo guy. Give me Walter Payton. Give me Dave Duerson. Give me Singletary. That was my
Capozzo, the unstoppable play.
Yes, you know about it. And not to mention if you throw deep to Willie Gault, like, there's a lot you can do with that team. So, all right, number nine, enough about Tecmo Bowl. This is a December 2004, Seahawks beat the Vikings 27-23. Kind of a disappointing season overall, but a good game near the end of the year for you.
I thought it was a good year for us. We just could not find a way to beat the greatest show on turf, the Rams, that year. But we had some good games, Minnesota being one of them. That was, I think, Randy Moss, Dante Culpepper. I mean, that was always a challenge. You had to go in there and bring your best stuff. And road games were a challenge for us early on. I forget the years, 03, 04. But we needed to figure out how to win and how to win in that early game sometimes. And that's why it's so cool to see this year's version, or I should say, like, the Pete Carroll version, yeah, of the Seahawks do so well in that early time zone situation. But it was always fun for me. I would always say this at the press conference, like, oh, I don't care who we're playing on the other side. But when you're playing a team that's airing it out and like a Randy Moss type team, you know that you got to score points and be a little bit more aggressive. And that was for sure one of those games.
All right, number eight here is December 07. Seahawks beat the Cardinals 42-21. He says it's the best performance of your 2007 Pro Bowl year. Needed a win to clinch a fourth consecutive NFC West title.
Yeah, so that would 07 would be Kurt Warner and those great, yeah, wide receivers that they, Anquan Boldin, Larry Fitzgerald. Arizona sneakily had a really tough team to play, seemed like all the time. The nice thing about, you know, playing those guys, whether it was home or away, we usually had a great home field advantage either way. Like, Seattle people or Seattle fans or somehow go to Arizona or there. I believe that one was at home, and, you know, one of those great games, just spreading it around. I remember hitting Nate Burleson in one of those, and you know, again, playing up against Kurt Warner, and that offense was always fun. You kind of get to air it out.
All right, two of these are stuck together, number six and number five. And these are both, I'm sorry, you know, I do number seven first. I skipped number seven, man. This is...
I am embarrassed by this, by the way, just so you know.
By this list, or that we're doing this in general?
Just that we're doing this, you know, yeah.
People want to hear from you. We got stories, okay, about all these games. All right. Plus, everybody loves a good list. So, all right, Seahawks 24, Niners 17. This is, looks like, last game of the season, right after Christmas 2003. Needing a win to stay alive in a wild card berth, you beat the Niners.
Yeah, so I think I mentioned this to you before. Going down and playing at San Fran was, yes, so cool. You know, it's just the history down there in that stadium. They can call that stadium different names, but we all know what it is. It's where Joe Montana and Steve Young and Jerry Rice and those guys played. And that was an awesome game. I remember we were down 14-0, come back. And really, I feel like that was one of my kind of breakout games where I really developed a little bit of confidence. And what put it over the top was after the game, when you walk through the 49ers tunnel, you share a tunnel back with the 49ers. And then you get to the end of the tunnel, they go right, you go left. And I'm in the locker room, and the defensive coordinator for the 49ers that day was Jim Mora, who was really a great defensive coordinator and really a rising star. I think he became head coach of the Falcons the next year. He came in our locker room, which is unheard of. The opposing coach never comes in your locker room. He came in our locker room to find me and kind of just like shake my hand, eye contact, and he's like, hey, like that was the grittiest, gutsiest, best performance I've seen from a quarterback this season. That was so impressive. And for me at that time, 2003, I had not really arrived or anything like that. So that meant a lot to me. And I think I ended up maybe going to my first Pro Bowl that year. And that's a division rival that we were like really it meant a lot to me. And so that and also I mentioned Seahawk fans are always at that game. Like if when we play in San Francisco in the fourth quarter, you can almost hear our crowd more just as much as anybody else's crowd.
Was that your first trip into the playoffs too?
2003, yes. Yeah. We were a wild card team. Did not really expect to be in the playoffs. It was kind of a wild ending, week 17 around the NFL. And we got in. It was super great. And then, you know, we go to Green Bay to play the Green Bay Packers. And, you know, that's sort of the infamous interception, how we ended the game in overtime. But it was just such a great learning year and kind of just playing with house money at that point, just like really learning how to cut it loose and trying to learn. I think one of the things Mike Holmgren was trying to do is get us to believe in ourselves. He's like, listen, I see it. I see the vision for it. We have the talent. You don't believe it. I also see that. You guys need to believe that you can get this done.
And, was that true? Did you guys not necessarily know that you were good enough to be a playoff team yet?
No, I didn't know. Heck no. I don't think that we thought of ourselves in the same breath as some of those teams. For sure, the team we were playing that day in the playoffs. You know, whoa, you guys have Brett Favre and Amon Green and, you know, all these future Hall of Famers. Like, what do we have? You know, like, so it was, again, I think losing in the last play of the wild card game in 03 and 04 really set us up for success in 05.
I am shocked that of all the people to go into the other team's locker room, it was Jim Mora. I never would have guessed that would be Jim who would say, throw caution to the wind and just break the rules like that. That's surprising.
I think you're being...
I love Jim Mora. I just find him to be very, you know, he's a unique human, don't you think?
Well, I got to say this. So much of coaching, people think it's about wins and losses, but I think it's a little bit about character development and making an impact on those around you in the game. And I ended up meeting back up with Jim Mora when he was my head coach for a year in Seattle. But had that never happened, that, you know, word of encouragement from an opponent that I had been studying all week, cool, who was a challenge to go up against, meant a lot to me.
All right. Number 6 and 5, Matt, are back-to-back years against the Rams. October of 05, you beat the Rams 37-31. And the next year in October 06, it is 30-28. Getting over the top against that team must have had some meaning, right? Especially, you know, sort of post greatest show on turf.
Yeah, greatest show on turf for sure. And they went from AstroTurf to field turf. Mm-hmm. They made a stadium decision, which I think actually helped us because they were so fast on AstroTurf, both offensively and defensively. Defensively, they had a great defense. Lovie Smith was calling the defense there for a while, and we just didn't have them figured out. But we also did something in free agency where we went and signed two of their defensive ends. We signed Grant Wistrom and Bryce Fisher, who not only, you know, kind of like we robbed from them to make us stronger, to make them weaker, but they also came with a little bit of information and sort of like what they feared about us. And so that was really a great thing. And then I think I mentioned to you last time that 05 game was in October. And the night before, the St. Louis Cardinals had like an epic baseball game. And the crowd was way into it. Like we could hear it because our hotel was right across the street. And I'm telling you, the crowd the next day and crowd noise in a dome is super, like it's a super advantage to the defense. They were lethargic. Like their crowd did not bring it. And that gave us just enough life to get a 2-point victory, and we played well. And I remember hitting Daryl Jackson on a deep ball that was kind of like the, you know, just the sword right in the gut to them. And it was just it was a great, great feeling and one that, you know, kind of kicked it off for us.
All right. Number 4 on this list is, I think, the most passing yards you had in a game here in Seattle, 449 yards, 36 of 53. For 449 in a 31-28 overtime win against the Chargers.
Watch the quarterback draw. And there it is. And it's a touchdown, Seahawks. And we're tied up with 1 second left. 28-28. We're running again. Look at the room that Hasselbeck has. And he gets on the ground at about the 33. He takes a hit from Rodney Harrison.
This will be 24 yards. He's 8 of 8 from this distance this year. He hasn't missed. It's up. It's good. It's game. The Seattle Seahawks have beaten the San Diego Chargers in overtime.
Pretty good win.
Huge win. Like, I can't even tell you, because we were struggling so much as a team. There were rumors that Mike Holmgren was going to lose his job. Some of the veteran guys had it on, like, good authority. They had a source that told them, blah, blah, blah. San Diego was a good team. Rodney Harrison, Junior Seau. Like, they were a legitimate team. And for us, we were just a growing. We were not a great team. Well, we were really finishing the year strong on offense. We had good young talent at wide receiver. We were number one in the league in third down. And, really, I had no idea that I had a bunch of numbers in that game. I remember our backup quarterback for that game was Jeff George, and because Dilfer was hurt. And he had previously been with the Chargers, and this game meant a lot to him. And he takes out a Sharpie before the game, and he called himself the Sheriff. And he was like, he autographs the football, and he's like, "Hey, man, I want you to go out and play like the Sheriff today," like third-person reference. And I was like, "All right, let's go." And we just played tough and gritty. And this is one of the things that Mike Holmgren was trying to instill in our offense. Like, people were saying we're a finesse offense because we're four wides and we're three wides. But we can be a tough, gritty, physical team and still be a four wides team. We can still, you know, use the pass and be a tough physical team. And so when I didn't slide and I hit Rodney Harrison, I think that excited my teammates just a little bit. And then later on in that game, Daryl Jackson making a huge moment of truth catch as he gets hit by Rodney Harrison in the end zone, but he holds onto the ball, touchdown. Corn Robinson, moment of truth, gritty, you know, catch in the back of the end zone, touchdown. And we fed Mac Strong that game. I remember in overtime, we were giving Mac Strong the ball so much that we end up winning the game, and we get back to our facility in Kirkland, and every single person in Max Strong's neighborhood had met us. I think he lived in Issaquah. They met us at the Kirkland facility to, like, congratulate him for his incredible game. And if you know Max Strong, he's just, like, one of the best guys, most unsung hero ever. That was an incredible time. And then flying back, there was all this, like, worry on our team. Is Mike Holmgren going to be the head coach next year?
Right.
What's going to happen tomorrow? Black Monday, they call it. And thank goodness that he was given the chance to stay, because, you know, he was just such an amazing coach and really took all of us to levels that we never could have gone without him.
Well, and certainly that leads into number three on this list, which is the NFC Championship game, January 06 of the 2005 season. Seahawks 34, Panthers 14. Now, I have two versions of the end of this game. I have Rabes' call.
1:40 and counting. DeLome is going to throw. He hits his receiver. That's Steve Smith, who makes an end miss. He coughs up the ball. The Seahawks have it. The Seahawks recover another fumble by the Carolina Panthers.
It's recovered by Marcus Trufant. First down, Seahawks. Steven, I think you can kiss the baby.
I think the fat lady is singing. We'll kiss the baby. We'll do whatever it takes.
Steve and Warren pretty excited that you guys were going to the Super Bowl. I also, though, Matt, I don't know if you ever heard Joe Buck's call. He seems a little less excited for you.
And all that's really left is the official stamp at the end of this game, which is the dousing of head coach Mike Holmgren.
Yeah, that you wonder when it's going to hit each one of these players and when they realize what exactly has happened. Smith lost the football. What a way for his frustrating night to end. Terrell knocked it out. Trufant comes away with it.
And that's about all Joe had to say until the end of the game.
Hey, I'm still getting goosebumps. That's awesome. That's awesome. And to hear Troy Aikman, I mean, I remember when it hit me. Like, I'm just so in the game. I'm so in the moment. We call a play and we score. And I remember looking up at the clock, like, okay, now what? And I'm like, oh gosh, we're gonna win. Okay. And then thinking, like, who do we got next week? And I'm like, what? Wait. We're in the Super Bowl next week. Like, I hadn't even thought that far ahead. Like, Mike had us so much one game at a time, and it was an amazing thing. But I want to just tell you a quick story about the first play of that game. I knew what the first play of the game was the day before. It was a naked bootleg, type of play. And we have one problem. If they come out in the Chicago Bears defense, like Buddy Ryan defense, we have a huge, huge problem. And they didn't do it a lot, but they did it enough. And So the day before that game, I'm watching the TV copy of all their games. And this was a rare thing for me to do back then. But I did it, and I saw that they would stem from this Bear defense into a defense that was not the Bear defense. And I was like, oh, man. And I heard the middle linebacker go, move! And then they would sort of bluff it. So I come out, first play of the game, and shoot, they're in that Bear defense. And I'm like, ah, this play is going to be a disaster, first play of the game. So instead of audibling out of it, I yell, just like that, I heard that middle linebacker on the TV copy. I go, move! And they all shift out of the Bear defense. It was their call I used. And they shifted out of the defense, and I was like, ah, oh, we got these guys.
So you audibled the defense.
I audibled the defense instead of having to audible our offense.
Did that ever work again in another time?
Never in my life. Or is that
the only time you've ever done that?
Never in my life. And because that was the NFC Championship game, that's the coaching staff that coached us in the Pro Bowl a few weeks later. And they said, hey, how did you do that? Like, what did you know? And I told them the story, and they were just – they could not even believe
it. That's unbelievable.
Like, you got to be kidding me. It was awesome. It was amazing. So shout out to my wife for the Saturday before the NFC Championship game, taking the kids to the mall or whatever she did so I could just sit home and just extra study like the TV copies of all the Carolina games. It helped.
That's pretty good stuff. There you go. That's Matt Hasselbeck from yesterday. That's, I think, the best story he's told.
That's the coolest behind-the-curtain thing, and it's verifiable. It's the other part.
Yeah, so we got a text that said, good morning, Mike. I just have to say I listened to yesterday's podcast of the Hasselbeck Show, and when he talked about audibling the Panthers' defense, it was awesome. So I went back and watched the game, and sure enough, you can hear him loud as day yell, move, and they do. It's awesome, just pure awesome. Love the show. Thank you very much. We appreciate that. Yeah, Matt is great, and he's also just got that quarterback thing, right, where he can yell move in such a way that you're like, okay, I guess that's what I've got to do. Like,
yeah, and if you're on the defense and you're not used to hearing his voice yet, it's the first play of the game, like there's a chance that it's going to get you, and it did.
That cracks me up. I told Brock that story because he hadn't heard it, and he goes, ah, defensive players are so dumb.
What do you hear what Wyman has to say about it?
All right, text message here. Podcast listener here. Hasselbeck saved your show yesterday, Salk. If it wasn't for him, it would have been 4 hours of whining and complaining out of you. Be better today. All right, we're going to try to do that. You're right. We were doing too much whining. We were doing too much complaining. So we're not going to go negative today. In fact,
you keep using this word we. I don't know if you know what that means.
You know what, Justin? We're a team. We're a team together. Are sure. we not? All of us, me, you, Maura.
I guess we're all dying.
We're
the
a
sword.
Team. We were negative yesterday.
Yeah. Hey, okay. We're a team until it comes to you saying Rashad Penny's going to have 100 rushing.
All
yards.
Right, Maura, you're off the team. And as for you, Justin, who came up with the segment yesterday for the little mulligan thing?
Doesn't ring a bell.
That was you, and not yet sure. we did it together. All right, we were too negative yesterday, and we're sorry about that as a group. So, coming up next, we will go in the other direction. The most likely place for the Seahawks to improve. We'll tell you what it is next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.